political process in Syria. And also in the headlines, Israeli Prime Minister ordering his military to seize a buffer zone with Syria in the Golan Heights, hours after regime tanks entered a Syrian town of Qunaitre. Good to have you with us. Now, beginning with Syria, the militants there have announced the capture of Damascus and the overthrow of Bashar al-Assad. They made the announcement in a brief statement on state television. They said that all people imprisoned by the former government have been released. Assad has reportedly flown out of Damascus for an unknown destination. In an interview, Syrian Prime Minister said that he has had contact with militant commander Abu Mohammed al-Jolani about how to manage the current period. Mohammed al-Jalali says the country should hold free elections so that the Syrian people could choose who they want to lead the country. He said he's open to cooperation with any leadership chosen by the people. Jalali had ordered his forces not to approach official institutions in Damascus, but pictures show the Iranian embassy in Damascus has been ransacked. Armed groups opposed the Syrian government launched an offensive in late November and rapidly took control of major cities such as Aleppo, Hama, and Homs. Now, new videos show the holy shrines of Sayyida Zainab and Sayyida Ruqayya are in complete safety after the capture of Damascus by Syrian armed groups. The two holy shrines, mainly visited by Shiites in Damascus, are still open. Iran saying, meanwhile, that Iran and staff working for the reconstruction of the shrine of Sayyida Zainab returned home last week before the attack on the Syrian capital. However, there are reports of an attack on the offices of the Iranian headquarters for development and reconstruction of the holy shrines. Armed groups have denied any involvement. UN Special Envoy for Syria, Geir Pedersen, has urged all armed groups there to maintain law and order, safeguard public institutions, and protect civilians. He made those comments at a press conference on the sideline of Doha Forum 2024. Held in the Qatari capital.
Let me urge all Syrians to prioritize dialogue, unity, and respect for international humanitarian law and human rights as they seek to rebuild their society.
The situation on the ground has changed dramatically. Obviously, the fact that HDS is a listed group creates challenges. It's extremely important that, as I said, that we now see on the ground a development that proves that we can achieve, you know, a transition to what I hope will be a democratic future for Syria. And here we are following, of course, extremely closely what is happening on the ground with all armed factions. And then there are certain procedures in place that will have to be followed if they are to be delisted. That is a process that I'm not in control of, but obviously we will continue to work to try, as I said, to make sure that we have as an inclusive process as possible. But let me be honest, this is work in progress.
Now, Iran says it's committed to Syria's unity, sovereignty, and territorial integrity, stressing that the future of the Arab country should be determined solely by its own people, free from foreign interference. The Iranian foreign ministry called for an urgent end to military conflicts, prevention of terrorist actions, and the initiation of national dialogue involving all segments of Syrian society. The ministry added that dialogue should aim to establish an inclusive government representing all Syrians. It says Iran supports international mechanisms, particularly UN Resolution 2254, to facilitate the political process in Syria. The foreign ministry asserted that ensuring the safety of all citizens and protecting religious sites and diplomatic missions is essential under international law. It added that Iran and Syria share a long-standing friendship and both nations are expected to maintain relations based on mutual interests and international legal commitments. The Israeli Prime Minister has meanwhile ordered the military to seize a buffer zone with Syria in the Golan Heights. Benjamin Netanyahu said that a 1974 disengagement agreement with Syria has collapsed as Syrian soldiers have abandoned their positions. He has said that Israel will not allow any hostile force to establish itself on their border with the occupied territories. Israeli tanks earlier entered the Syrian town of Qunaitre in the Golan Heights. Israel has also launched a wave of air raids in Syria after the militants take over the country. The Al-Mazza military base in Damascus and Khalkhala in the southern Al-Suwaida part of the country were hit. Attacks were also reported in rural areas of Deraa in the south. The targets included weapons depots, air defense batteries, and missile manufacturing facilities. Not a segment dedicated to Gaza and developments there. More Palestinian civilians are killed as the IOF continues to pound the blockaded territory. At least five people were killed after Israeli warplanes bombed tens of displaced people in Al-Mash'ala area near Deir al-Bala. Israeli fighter jets also bombed a residential area in Gaza City's Shawa neighborhood, killing at least three people and injuring several more. The Israeli artillery, meanwhile, shelled a number of areas across Gaza, leaving an unknown number of people dead or injured. More than 44,700 Palestinians have been killed so far, and some 106,000 others injured since the Israeli onslaught began in October last year. Our Khan Yunis correspondent Ahmed al-Najjar joined us just an hour ago with details regarding the latest Israeli attacks across the besieged Gaza Strip.
The occupation escalates its attacks against Kamal Adwan Hospital for more than 66 days now, surrounding the hospital and deliberately shooting and shelling every corner of the hospital. Dr. Hassan Al-Busafiya, the director of Kamal Adwan Hospital, announced today that all the tanks of water, all the tanks of fuel were destroyed earlier today as they were targeted by the Israeli occupation, and that actually led to the eruption of a fire that wasn't extinguished due to the absence of all civil defense crew services as Israeli occupation targeted them as well and rendered them out of service. The occupation has been escalating its attacks and extensive ground operation on the northern parts of the Gaza Strip for more than 66 days now. People not only moved from one shelter to another, but dozens of times they were transported and has to relocate over the past year. Their tents that they were managed to build or to establish are worn out now. They are left literally to drown amid the harsh weather that is getting more worse and worse every day. Not only that, but also they can't even find proper clothing or any means of warmth as the occupation prevents the entry of commercial product, prevents the entry of needed clothing, and also prevents the entry of fuel and heating gas. That is deepening the suffering of people.
December 8th marks the 37th anniversary of the beginning of the uprising against Israeli occupation. And this year, Palestinians around the world commemorate the day by reflecting on the long history of the resistance and the unbearable weight of the genocide ongoing in Gaza. Ghada Ibrahim reports from Gaza.
The Palestinian Intifada on December the 8th, 1987, was an outburst of anger from the repressed Gazans, which accumulated over the long-repeated atrocities of the Israeli regime and its settlers against them. The first Intifada, meaning uprising, initiated in northern Jabalia refugee camp after an Israeli truck driver intentionally collided with parked civilian vehicles, killing four Palestinian workers, three of whom were from the camp itself. This served as the last straw for Gazans to unite over a cause, a concerted and defiant opposition to the occupation. While the regime initially thought it had succeeded in quenching public awareness and putting an end to any notion of resistance, 37 years later, the Al-Aqsa flood operation proved that the cause can never be derailed.
In the first Intifada, the Israeli occupation forces shot my cousin directly in front of me. Until now, I have not overcome that situation. I still feel that same fear and savagery. In this war, They also killed my brother. It is the same act of terrorism the regime is committing since the beginning of this occupation.
As people in Gaza are fighting for survival amid unprecedented genocide, the spirit of the Intifada resonates with a new urgency. Today's war on Gaza, inflicted by Israel's continued aerial and ground raids, destruction of civilian infrastructure, and weaponization of aid delivery, is seen as an extension of the same cycle of violence and disposition that sparked the Intifada nearly four decades ago.
The anniversary of the Intifada comes this year as we are living another Intifada and another relentless struggle. We face a war of bombing, invasion, and systematic starvation. It has never been in this brutality.
The Palestinians in the war-ravaged Gaza Strip are nowadays forced to pay a hefty price in return for their freedom, dignity, and into the occupation. A cost that has only risen horrifically by the scale of death toll and the ongoing genocide in Gaza. On the 8th of December, as the world reflects on 37 years of a struggle, the message from Gaza is clear. The Intifada is not over, and the fight for justice and freedom continues. Ghada Ibrahim, Deir al-Balah.
Palestinians have faced decades of suppression under the Israeli occupation from the Nakba in 1948 to the violent crackdowns during the First Intifada in 1984. Israel constantly abuses Palestinians in different ways. Our exploring program explores the key milestones and challenges in the decades-long conflict between Israel and the Palestinians.
December 8th marks the 37th anniversary of the beginning of the uprising against Israeli occupation. And this year, this anniversary is significant due to the genocide that is still ongoing, leaving a trail of death and destruction, including over 444,000 lives. Now, a bit of history check is in order here. It was back in December 1987 where the deaths of four Palestinians happened in the Gaza Strip. It occurred because the Israeli regime ran over with its truck, and that sparked a mass national movement of a civil disobedience at the time against the Israeli occupation. It was a result of long brewing discontent of Palestinians who were subjected to unspeakable oppression. The Intifada was distinguished by widespread participation across the Palestinian society. You have workers, you have university students, members of cultural associations, and you have this happening in cities, in villages, and also in refugee camps. Palestinian resistance was characterized by general strikes, also boycotts of Israeli political institutions and Israeli products, and refusal to work on Israeli settlements, and also a refusal to pay taxes to the Israeli regime. But the uprising was met with brutal repression by Israel. Extreme violence from the Israeli army, or regime forces as we call it, resulted in over 1,200 deaths. You had over 230 children also included in that, and thousands more who were injured by Israel's policy of beatings. And by the way, the beatings included instructions to the Israeli regime forces to break the bones of unarmed protesters. Well, Israel also imposed collective punishments on the Palestinian population, including around-the-clock curfews, the closure of Palestinian schools and universities, the destruction of Palestinian homes, lands, crops, and the cutting of water and fuel supplies. Israel made mass arrests, even in the case of political expression. For example, anybody carrying the Palestinian flag in demonstrations to suppress the resistance as a result of it. During the course of the First Intifada, Palestine had the highest incarceration rate at that time in the world. Over 170,000 Palestinians were arrested, often for acts as small as participating in a march or carrying a Palestinian flag, with torture routinely used against prisoners. Roughly 20% of Palestinians under occupation, actually including 40% of the men, went through Israeli prisons. Israel currently holds 10,000 Palestinians as political prisoners, including over 5,000 in administrative detention, in violation of the universal rights that guarantee fair trials to all people. Israel's system of arrest and detention is not only immoral, it's illegal. And when it comes to intifadas, well, there have been three, although many may believe only two have occurred. In addition to the first intifada that we're talking about occurring in 1987, the second intifada, called the Al-Aqsa Intifada, took place, and it began on the 29th of December 2000. And then you have the third intifada that we're still experiencing, although some don't recognize it as such, a result of the Operation Al-Aqsa flood.
Now, Yemen has once again hit a vital Israeli target in the occupied territories. The spokesman of the Yemeni Armed Forces says that the drone attack was conducted in cooperation with the Islamic resistance in Iraq and in solidarity with the people of Gaza.
Triumphing for the oppression of the Palestinian people and their mujahideen, and in response to the crimes of the Israeli enemy against our people in Gaza, the Yemeni armed forces, in cooperation with the Islamic resistance in Iraq, carried out a military operation targeting a vital target in southern occupied Palestine with a number of drones. The operation achieved its goals successfully. The Yemeni armed forces, alongside the mujahideen of the Iraqi resistance, continue to respond to the crimes of the Israeli enemy against our people in the Gaza Strip. These operations will not stop until the aggression stops and the siege on the Gaza Strip is lifted.
And with that, we come to the end of this newscast.
From the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
The Euromed Monitor field team has documented harrowing incidents of direct killings and extrajudicial executions of civilians by the Zionist regime troops carried out with no justification whatsoever. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Please stay tuned for more. Palestine Chronicle wrote, the Geneva-based Euromed Human Rights Monitor has documented dozens of deliberate killings and new field executions carried out by Israeli regime forces against numerous Palestinian civilians in the northern Gaza Strip. The rights group said in one of its latest reports, these actions are part of the ongoing escalation and the broader framework of genocide perpetrated against Palestinians for over 30 months. The Zionist regime's actions include killing and terrorizing civilians, forcibly evicting them from their homes and displacing them outside northern Gaza province. Euromed Monitor said, this constitutes one of the largest cases of forced displacement in modern history. Its field team documented harrowing incidents of direct killings and extrajudicial executions of civilians by Israeli regime troops carried out with no justification whatsoever. This, it said, was in addition to the numerous atrocities committed by Israeli forces, ranging from bombing homes with residents inside to mass killings of displaced civilians in shelters and the targeting of gatherings and vehicles. One such killing was that of Khalid Mustafa Ismail, 58, and his eldest son, Ibrahim, 21, shot inside their home in Beit Lahia by the Zionist regime forces in front of their family on Wednesday, November 13, 2024. Israeli occupation forces began advancing into the area where we were sheltering. We stayed trapped in the house, and less than 2 hours later, the forces blew open the door and stormed the building, said Tamam Abdul Maqdame, 61, a resident of Beit Lahia. He said, I stayed upstairs with my family while my sister Haifa, her husband Khalid Mustafa Ismail Al-Shafi, 58, and their children remained on the ground floor. We heard gunfire, but were too afraid to look and stayed huddled together in a single room upstairs. Within minutes, the soldiers entered and ordered us to evacuate quickly towards the eastern area near Beit Lahia Stadium and Abu Tamam School. Maqdame continued, when we descended to the ground floor, I found my brother-in-law Khaled lying dead with 2 gunshots to his abdomen, blood streaming from him. His eldest son, Ibrahim, 21, had been shot in the head. I stood in shock for moments before a soldier threatened me to move or be shot. He said his sister, Haifa, was collapsed over her husband and son, begging to say goodbye to them. But the 12 soldiers present refused. We tried to pull her away as she kept saying, they executed them in front of me. Maqdame said they rushed out of the house as a quadcopter drone hovered above us with approximately 15 soldiers stationed around the house. My sister kept repeating, they executed them in front of me. His sister recounted that as soon as the soldiers blew open the door and stormed in, they immediately shot her husband and son while they stood to the side of the room. They killed them without them moving a muscle, she said, adding, this happened in front of the small children, 4 boys and 4 girls, who witnessed their father and brother executed before their eyes. The Euromed Monitor team noted that Haifa and her children continue to suffer from severe psychological trauma, with Haifa refusing to speak to anyone. At the time of the documentation of this testimony, the bodies of both father and son remained
able to retrieve them, the report said.
Another documented testimony is that of AJ, a 54-year-old whose name was withheld for his safety as he remains in a high-risk area. He provided testimony about the siege, starvation tactics, and field executions carried out by the military in Beit Lahia. He said, for the past 10 days, Beit Lahia has been under an extensive Israeli campaign, forcing people from their homes into specific gathering points designated by the military. The Israeli army raids homes, detains some residents, and orders others to move to the eastern part of the town near Abu Tamam School. At the time, he continued, the residents of Beit Lahia were concentrated in 3 adjacent shelters near the Beit Lahia Municipal Stadium. Abu Tamam School, Beit Lahia Preparatory School, and Beit Lahia Secondary School. Any resident attempting to return to their home to sleep is targeted. Their house is bombed and artillery shells are fired to force them out. Currently, there is no food available for the approximately 5,000 people sheltering in the 3 schools. He added, to secure food, displaced people risk venturing out to their homes to retrieve any remaining supplies. Dozens who attempt to do so have not returned, as they were executed in the streets. Euromed Monitor also highlighted the testimony of a Palestinian from the Hamouda family who managed to reach his home near the western roundabout and retrieve a bag of flour. He said, while returning,
I saw dogs mauling the corpses of five young men lying on the roadside. People I knew from the Zayed and Rajab families. Beside one of the victims, there was a bag of flour. It seems he had successfully retrieved it from his home, but the Israeli army shot him as he was returning to the shelter. He explained that any food we manage to secure from nearby homes is distributed primarily to children, followed by the elderly in smaller portions. Young adults receive at best a single loaf of bread per day. The rights group urged the international community once again to take decisive action against the Zionist regime's massacres in the Gaza Strip, emphasizing that its reluctance to do so makes it complicit in these crimes and grants Israel a green light to escalate its genocide. The international system, including the International Criminal Court, the European Union and various United Nations bodies, has collectively failed to achieve the fundamental goals and principles upon which they were founded, the organization stated. Nearly 70,000 Palestinians have been trapped for 2 months without access to food or medicine in the northern Gaza Strip, according to the Euromed Monitor, the organization said. This ongoing situation has resulted in numerous deaths and forced displacements in what many consider one of the most horrific campaigns of genocide in modern history.
Ocean of Dua.
In the name of Allah, the Compassionate, the Merciful. Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu Alaikum. Welcome to another edition of the program, The Ocean of Dua. In today's program, we will listen to a commentary of Ziyara al-Yasin by Sheikh Abdul Raza Bahrani, a graduate of the Hausa Seminary of Qom.
On that morn before the world was born, in the slowly world I hear that music near and far. Did we the cadence of divine music hear? Did we the cadence of
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
All praise belongs to Allah, the Lord of the worlds. And may Allah's peace and blessings be upon the best and the last of the Prophets Muhammad and his pure and infallible progeny and household, especially his last successor, Imam Mahdi, may Allah hasten his reappearance. And may Allah's peace and blessings be upon you and with you, my dear brothers and sisters. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. This is the Ocean of Dua, and I am Abdul Raza Bahrani. Insha'Allah, I will explain and interpret the passages and sentences of the dua which is recited after Ziyarat al-Yasin in this series of lectures. Now, let's listen to some passages of this Ziyarat.
Supplication following the Ziyarat of al-Yasin.
Allahumma inni as'aluka an tusalli ala Muhammadin nabi rahmatik wa kalimati nurik.
O Allah, I beseech you to send blessings upon Muhammad and the Prophet of your mercy and the word of your light.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad wa ajil farajahum wal
Alhamdulillah, we finished interpreting Ziyarat Ali Yasin, and from this session we're going to start discussing the chapters and the sentences of a dua which comes after Ziyarat Ali Yasin, and it is so much recommended to recite it after this ziyarah. And this ziyarah is also full of great knowledge and full of great things. For example, we start this ziyarah by salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad, and then we ask God the Almighty to fill our heart with the light and fill our heart, our chest and breast, our thought, our determination, our power, our everything with His light. So this dua starts with Allahumma inni as'aluka an tusalli ala Muhammadin nabiyyi rahmatika wa kalimati nurik. O my God, I ask you to send your peace and blessings on Muhammad, the prophet, your prophet of mercy, and your word of light. وَأَن تَمْلَأَ قَلْبِي نُورَ الْيَقِينِ, and to fill my heart with the light of certainty. At first, the salawat itself is a very important act of worship, which is mentioned in many of narrations, and there are so many narrations by the Holy Prophet and Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam in emphasizing the worth and value of prayer, and they have told us to repeatedly send peace and blessings and salawat on the Holy Prophet and his pure and infallible household. And it is said that on many of the ulama, after studying the narrations, like Ayatollah Bahjat, after studying the narrations, he says that I could not find anything more beneficial than salawat. And salawat is a thing that will give us the rewards, will elevate our state and position before God the Almighty, and also it removes the sins that we have committed. There is a narration from Imam Ridha alayhi salam that says that that salawat on the Holy Prophet and his pure and infallible household will remove the sins, and this is done faster than and better than the water which extinguishes fire.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. How to pray for the faraj or the relief. Imam Al-Asr ajalallahu ta'ala farajahu al-sharif to his second representative, Muhammad bin Uthman rahmatullahi alayhi, addressing the Shias, says, pray a lot for the relief, as indeed it is your relief. One who is disturbed, distressed, and heartbroken due to the separation from the Imam, the prayers of such a person, they have two effects. Either the Imam's arrival will be hastened, or the afflictions, the problems, and the distresses of the person praying for the relief of the Imam, they will be removed. As a result, he will be eased, he will be pleased, and will be comforted. In either cases, as Imam Al-Asr ajalallahu ta'ala farajahu sharif has said, وَأَكْثِرُ الدُّعَى لِتَعْجِيلِ الْفَرَجِ فَإِنَّ ذَٰلِكَ فَرَجْكُمْ. Pray a lot for the relief, as indeed it is your relief.
Allahumma kun li waliyika hujjat ibn al-Hasan salawatuka
The Ocean of Dua, commentary of Ziyara Al Yassin by Sheikh Abdul Raza Bahrani, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qom.
There's another narration that Imam Rida alayhi salam says you need to repeat salawat a lot because this will remove your sins. And in a narration from Imam Sadiq alayhi salam, we read that when the Holy Prophet is mentioned, then you need to do an excessive salawat on him and repeat the salawat on his eminence, because whoever sends peace and blessings and salawat on the Holy Prophet just once, then Allah the Almighty will send his peace and blessings on that person in 1,000 salawat, in 1,000 lines of the angels, and there will be nothing from what Allah the Almighty has created except that thing will send peace and blessings on that servant who has pronounced salawat on the Holy Prophet. So this is very important. And this is one of the etiquettes of dua, because here we are going to start a dua. The previous part, it was ziyara. We wanted to talk to Imam of the time. But after that, this is a dua. And one of the etiquettes of dua, one of the adab of dua, is to start it with salawat on the Holy Prophet and his pure and infallible household and Ahlul Bayt. There's a narration from the Holy Prophet himself that says, كُلُّ دُعَاءٍ مَحْجُوبٌ حَتَّى يُصَلِّي عَلَى النَّبِيِّ. All the du'as will be veiled and they cannot be, they are not fulfilled and answered until the salawat on the Holy Prophet is pronounced. And in another narration, Imam, the Holy Prophet himself mentions that As-salatu alay nurun ala as-salat, that if a person sends salawat on me, that will be a light for him on Sirat in the Day of Judgment. And that is why we start this dua with salawat on the Holy Prophet and his pure and infallible household, because we want our duas to be answered and to be heard by Allah the Almighty. Walhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parstoday.com. Until the next program, take care and goodbye. To you through heart, my
voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
The United Nations Relief and Works Agency for Palestine Refugees, UNRWA, said families in the Gaza Strip are facing dire conditions due to repeated displacement, reiterating the urgent need for an immediate ceasefire. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Please stay tuned for more. Palestine Chronicle wrote, around 60,000 Palestinians in the northern Gaza Strip are living in catastrophic conditions under the Israeli siege that has been ongoing for more than 60 days. According to a spokesperson for UNRWA, UN Relief Agency for Palestine Refugees, Jonathan Fowler, UNRWA's Senior Director of Communications, in an interview with the Anadolu news agency said, "This is an absolutely unprecedented level of tragedy. It's an unprecedented humanitarian crisis." Describing the situation as perfectly catastrophic, Fowler said, "Everywhere you look, all the indicators are completely disastrous. The lack of medicine, the lack of food, the lack of drinking water, the lack of access, the constant displacement, the death, the destruction, the missing people." Almost 2 million people in Gaza were entirely reliant on humanitarian aid to survive, the spokesperson stressed. Fowler emphasized, "This is a man-made disaster, and it's absolutely unconscionable that this continues." The UNRWA official explained that it's not complicated to understand that if you need 500 trucks of food and other supplies a day, and you're only getting 70, 80, 90, that is why people are suffering so severely. Palestinians in northern Gaza are completely cut off, Fowler continued. They have no food, they have no water, there is not even any ambulances. Overall, the north is one of the most affected areas of the entire Gaza Strip, said the spokesperson. That pocket is the sort of epicenter of the current humanitarian tragedy, and that this again is a reason why there has to be access for humanitarians and there has to be an immediate ceasefire. He warned, due to the absolute level of tragedy there, people will be dying of hunger in those besieged areas as there is nothing to eat, Fowler stated. The responsibility to protect aid workers and aid supplies falls upon the occupying power, and that is the regime of Israel, and so everything must be done by the Israeli regime authorities to ensure that aid flows safely to Gaza. Flouting a UN Security Council resolution demanding an immediate ceasefire, the Zionist regime has faced international condemnation amid its continued brutal offensive on Gaza. Currently on trial before the International Court of Justice for Genocide Against Palestinians, the child killer regime of Israel has been waging a devastating war on Gaza since October 7, 2023. According to Gaza's Ministry of Health, at least 45,000 Palestinians have been martyred and at least 105,740 wounded in the Zionist regime's ongoing genocide in Gaza starting on October 7, 2023. Moreover, at least 11,000 people are unaccounted for, presumed dead under the rubble of their homes throughout the Gaza Strip. Palestinian and international organizations say that the majority of those martyred and wounded are women and children.
The Israeli regime war has resulted in acute famine in Gaza, mostly in the northern parts of Gaza, resulting in the death of many Palestinians, mostly children. The Zionist regime aggression has also resulted in the forceful displacement of nearly 2 million people from all over the Gaza Strip, with the vast majority of the displaced forced into the densely crowded southern city of Rafah, near the border with Egypt, in what has become Palestine's largest mass exodus since 1948 Nakba. Later in the war, hundreds of thousands of Palestinians began moving from the south to central Gaza in a constant search for safety. In the meantime, Wafa News Agency wrote, the United Nations Relief and Works Agency for Palestine Refugees, UNRWA, said recently that families in the Gaza Strip are facing dire conditions due to repeated displacement, reiterating the urgent need for an immediate ceasefire. The UN agency added in a post on X, in Deir al-Balah, in the central of the Gaza Strip and throughout the Gaza Strip, families continue to face dire conditions. It explained that these families are being displaced repeatedly due to the ongoing shelling and are seeking shelter in crowded UNRWA schools and temporary tents and are struggling to access basic necessities. It reiterated the urgent need for an immediate ceasefire in the Gaza Strip and ensuring unhindered access to humanitarian assistance that meets the growing needs. The ongoing aggression waged by the occupation since October 7, 2023 has forced about 2 million of the Strip citizens, numbering about 2.3 million Palestinians, to be displaced in tragic conditions with a deliberate severe shortage of food, water and medicine. Famine has spread in most areas of the Gaza Strip as a result of the ongoing aggression, especially in the north, following the persistence of genocide and starvation to force citizens to migrate south.
Ask the followers of the remembrance if ye know not.
You are listening to the program The Key on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Shiraz, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program, The Key, here at IRIB English Radio. Today on The Key, we're going to be examining a question which is related to one of the cardinal Islamic virtues. I'm speaking of nothing but the remembrance of God, Zikrullah, which is contrasted by negligence or ghaflat, which is one of the vices that Islam has advised us to avoid. In many places in the Holy Quran, God Almighty admonishes us and advises us to remember Him. In one verse of the Holy Quran, God Almighty says the following, O you who have faith, do not let your possessions and your children distract you from the remembrance of Allah. And whoever does that, it is they who are the losers. And in another blessed verse from the Holy Quran, we read the following, O you who have faith, remember Allah with a frequent remembrance and glorify Him morning and evening. All right, so remembrance of God is one of the virtues which Islam has advised us to adopt. Today, the question that we want to pose in connection with this virtue is this, what are the fruits or consequences or results of the remembrance of God? When we understand this better, we can then understand why the remembrance of Allah has been advised and has been suggested for us. In order to understand the answer to this question, we can take inspiration from the hadith, which have been narrated from our infallible imams, alayhim as-salam. And by way of example, one hadith which has been transmitted from Imam Ali alayhi salam, says the following: the remembrance of Allah is a repellent of Satan. So one of the effects of remembering God is that we are protected from the insinuations and temptations and whisperings of the accursed Satan, or, you know, of course, which can come in many forms. When we are tempted by anything, if we remember Allah, then, you know, that temptation, it subsides and we can protect ourselves from falling into sin. Another effect of the remembrance of Allah, according to one hadith, is that it gives us patience and forbearance and tolerance in the face of hardships and in the face of difficulties and in the face of the annoyance of other, you know, people who might try to hurt us or harm us, either verbally or physically. Imam Ali alayhi salam said, remembrance of Allah expands the breasts. Al-dhikru yashrahu al-sadr. Al-dhikru yashrahu al-sadr. Sharh al-sadr. This is a Quranic concept that has been alluded to in many places in the Holy Quran. One place we read regarding the Holy Prophet, God says, Alam nashrah laka sadrak. Did we not expand your breast for you? Right? So this is a virtue. This is a case where, so therefore, this is a case where we see that one of the Islamic virtues gives rise to another Islamic virtue, that being sharh al-sadr, or patience and forbearance and tolerance. By remembering Allah, we can adopt this other Islamic virtue as well. Thank you for joining us here on The Key. We were looking at the remembrance of Allah and its effects and consequences in our life in the light of the hadith of the infallible Imams alayhi salam. Until next time, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
You just listened to the program The Key, an IRIB English radio with Sheikh Shiraz, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
You can also send your questions to englishradio@irib.ir.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAD 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is iranradio.ir. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
A white light lit up the sky over Gaza tonight. People running for cover, not knowing whether they're dead or alive. They came with their tanks and their planes, with ravaging fiery flames, and nothing remains. Just a voice rising up in the smoky haze. We will not go down in the night without a fight. You can burn up our mosques and our
spirit will never die. We will not go down in Gaza tonight. Women and children alike, murdered and massacred night after night. While the so-called leaders of countries afar debated on who's wrong or right. But their powerless words were in vain, and the bombs fell down like acid rain. But through the tears and the blood and the pain, you could still hear that voice through the smoky haze. We will not go down in the night without a fight. You can burn up our mosques and our homes and our schools, but our spirit will never die. We will not go down in Gaza tonight. Tonight, a blinding flash of white light lit up the sky over Gaza tonight. People running for cover, not knowing whether they're dead or alive. They came with their tanks and their planes, with ravaging fiery flames. Nothing remains, just a voice rising up in the smoky haze. We will not go down in the night without a fight. You can burn up our mosques and our homes and our schools, but our spirit will never die. We will not go down Gaza tonight.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Militant groups in Syria take full control of the capital, Damascus, as the whereabouts of the deposed Syrian president, Bashar al-Assad, remains unknown. Iran says the future of Syria should